Jaylen Brown today.
What the hell is he talking
Celtics
about?
Celtics media day over at the Auerbach Center. I don't really know. He said it was winning the championship felt the same as losing the championship because it was two ends of the same spectrum, but the low felt like the high because it was
like
an extreme feeling.
Pleasure and pain or close.
Right, yeah.
Sweet and salty.
Very, very deep.
I don't care for it, quite honestly, unless if I want to spin zone it and say what he's trying to say is that the lowest of lows motivated him to win, and now he's equally as motivated to prove they are winners, something of that crap. But if you tell me you felt the same, like, after you lost as you won, I don't.
It's a weird thing to
say. I don't understand it. I think he tries too hard.
That sounds like a bit of a try-hard.
Just say it was awesome. We had a lot of fun. We played basketball with Terp at 3 a.m. or whatever. Like,
an answer like that, you expect him to be like sitting there in like a yoga pose, like winning and losing are the
same. You know what it is? It's Kyrie-esque.
Yeah, basically.
It's Kyrie-esque, and no, don't. Just say it was awesome. I drank a lot. We had a parade. They gave me a ring. It was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, me and that girl went to the ESPYs.
Yes.
I didn't go to Paris, but eventually I went. It was all very nice. Justin Turpin's here, by the way. You were down at Media Day today. How was it?
It was good. It was pretty much what you'd expect.
How was the vibe? Was everybody, you know, strutting around?
No, they seemed locked in.
Really?
Like, really, I think, you know, it's oddly enough, Jaylen Brown, one of my biggest takeaways today was how loose he was. Like, never really seen him like that. He walked in like with a smile, was smiling like, the whole time. Like, he was really loose today, which was kind of interesting to see. And he shaved his beard, which looks like a rookie year Jaylen Brown now.
Wow,
so,
yeah, I saw a picture
Yeah, just
of that.
How loose he was, though, was kind of interesting to me.
I think that's a good thing. I mean,
for sure.
In theory, we're going to talk all year about the bullseye and the pressure and, you know, the being targeted by everybody and all that. So if he's coming in loosey-goosey, now, he probably should. What does he have to not be loose about? I know, forget the whole Olympic thing, but just in general, he got his contract, and then after he got his contract, he proved he was a better player, played great basketball to help lead his team to an NBA title. Last year was the pressure year in a way.
Yeah, especially coming off that Game 7.
Now the pressure's off, right?
Right.
Now the pressure is like this. If there's pressure on anyone, he just looks over and goes, hey, Jason, how you doing over there? How many MVP? Oh, you don't have MVPs? Did you prove your contract? No, you haven't proved your contract yet. You got some pressure on you. He's the one. Jason Tatum is the one with the pressure this year.
I don't think any of them are really looking at.
Then he shows him his Olympic gold medal and says, what do you think of this?
You didn't play.
He did get a little annoyed with the question on that, though.
Tatum
did? On the Olympic gold medal.
Well, he's got a thing there, too. Yeah, I mean, this is a very weird offseason. And Ramona Shelburne put it all together and wrote about it today. But 12 days after they won, while there's still confetti on the ground from the parade, Wick announces that they're selling the team. And then after that was the whole thing with the Olympics, which somehow managed to alienate both Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and a little bit Derek White, too, because he kind of got caught in the crossfire there. And all of that, I mean, that... And Porzingis with his injury, too, was the other aspect of that. But just those three things happening all very quickly into the summer, I mean, that's not generally how a reigning champion, you know, like a championship summer supposed to go. It seemed like it quickly went south.
Especially for a team that's bringing back essentially their whole roster. They're bringing back 15 of the 17 guys, if you include two ways. And the way the summer played out, like the biggest story of the NBA offseason was Wick Grosbeck announcing his sale. And like you said, that comes while confetti is still on the ground at TD Garden and in the streets of Boston from the parade. And then you get the Olympics, which changed it gave something to talk about for the whole summer. Like, it changed all the discourse around this team. It wasn't really about how will Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown respond to winning a championship. Now it's how will they respond to being disrespected, and will they use that as motivation?
Yeah, I would argue there's nothing negative about this offseason for the Celtics, because even the sale thing, the negatives are down the road when somebody else buys the team and tells them to run it differently, doesn't want to get into the luxury tax and the apron, right? Like, for right now, I mean, Brad has said it to anyone who'll listen. Well, he told us to do businesses. Yeah,
because
he's the one selling. He doesn't care. It's the guy who buys it that might actually care how you're running the basketball team. But from that, you did your contracts. If you believe them, Porzingis is good, happy, ahead of schedule. Like, by the way, you motivated their two best players. So where's the negatives in the summer and the offseason?
I don't think there's any. And you look at,
they said the sale's not even going to be complete until like 2028, right?
Yeah, and they talk about
that's most
Wick's
still
the governor.
A bunch of those contracts are going to be expired by then.
And they talk about business as usual. This team really can't do anything anyway because they're hard capped as a second apron team, so they can only bring in guys on vet minimum deals. And Brad Stevens has also been clear that he wants to give these guys a chance to run it back, and he believes they deserve a chance, which they absolutely do.
Yeah, I would also say, like, what do they need to do? We just had an argument. It was a stupid argument. Some of them are
Most
on this show.
Most of them are, yeah, generally.
Like, I think they could win a title, maybe not easily, but losing somebody. And he got mad because I said, I think you could take off Brown and Tatum and still win a title. One of them, not both of them. But what do they need? Like, if you were looking to do something, what do you need? I mean, what's the weakness?
They showed last year that they are one of the best teams in NBA history. Like, that's a team, and maybe not right now, you don't realize it, but that's a team people are going to talk about as one of the greatest teams ever assembled.
Right.
Like, just how good they were.
Even if they're just a one-off? Season.
Well, yeah, even just from that year. I mean, look at the net rate. Like, I don't want to go all analytic
nerd
here, but
right.
if you look
at
the net rating and the plus-minus and all that, they are, by the metrics, one of the greatest teams ever put together. And it feels like these guys can't be a one-off, because I think that is a good point, especially now with how much money you've invested in this roster. You can't just be a one-off. And I don't think they're looking at it like that.
No.
And I also don't think that they're really feeling the pressure to repeat. And I think they all kind of are falling under what Joe Mazzulla is saying. Just focus on doing it again. They're not really focused on last year. It's now like, we haven't done anything. Now we have to go out and win a championship. That's the goal.
But is it also, is it pressure or is it just a challenge? They've been challenged in many ways. They met some of the challenges. They didn't meet some of the challenges over the years. To me, this is almost an increased challenge or the next challenge on their docket because that's the other thing. It's not, they're not fading. They're all in the primes of their careers. There's no reason to really believe anybody is, because I think that's where you get in trouble. Like, oh, that guy got hurt, or that guy's not as good as he was last year. Like, who do I expect that? Jrue Holiday getting a little older.
Al Horford, you're going to have to lean on him a lot. I mean,
but you've been managing that.
Yeah, sure.
Right? You know what I mean? You've been dealing with managing that.
38 now, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. I mean, that's.
I also think the whole Al thing's a little overblown, though. You saw what he can do last year. Like, when Kristaps Porzingis was out, he averaged almost 30 minutes a game.
He did.
And was as impactful as ever. And I also give him a lot of credit for adapting to that swing role. He had never come off the bench, and NBA creatures are just such creatures of habit.
Yep.
Like, it's so hard to go from being a starter your entire career to transitioning to a bench role and then coming back off the bench and into the starting lineup. And he was pretty much split down the middle last year, especially in the regular season, and didn't miss a beat. Like, that guy is just so reliable. And even when you look past that, like with Porzingis out, from Namish Keita, Xavier Tillman, Luke Kornet, all of those guys have proven they can be viable bigs in this league. I mean, look at Tillman. He hit one of the biggest shots of the finals in game three.
True.
He did. The one name we haven't mentioned yet, I don't believe, is Joe Mazzulla. I think that's a guy to just keep an eye on, because I'm always interested to a young coach, success, how he deals with success. Does he overthink it? And we're going to say it now, he's a different kind of guy. He's like a unique personality.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how he handles the success and how he goes about establishing his own legacy. So forget the Boston Celtics, forget Tatum and Brown. He's well on his way to establishing his own legacy as a multi-time championship head coach. Any concerns there as to how he handles success and expectation?
I don't have any concerns, because it takes a unique character to come in to such a historic franchise like the Celtics that had 18 banners before, or 17 banners before he got here.
Especially the way he did, last minute, crazy situation.
And changed the culture in a way. Like, he completely transformed this team. And it says a lot, and sure, the talent's one thing, but to get all that talent to coexist and play together, everyone on the same page, and everyone really buying into his message, I think he's the perfect leader for this team. Just the way he approaches the game, and even his X's and O's. I mean, a lot of people overlook that. Like, again, go back to the metrics. He is one of the best coaches in the league with the side outs, after timeout plays. He's just their perfect leader right now because of the way he approaches the game. And again, it takes a special person that can kind of relate to guys and get them to buy into their message when you're talking about these guys with all this talent. Like, it says a lot about him, and I think he's the guy that they want right now.
And he's weird, and the weirdness could help them.
Yeah,
like, I actually liked the whole forget the target on the back, put it between my eyes kind of thing. That had a hint of Ime to it, that real hardo, like, everybody knows I'm kind of a hardo. I appreciate that approach.
I hope he's not too much like Ime. But
okay, I mean, like, leading the team and setting a culture and that kind of a tone.
Sure.
because I like that. Like, everybody knows what's going on. You're the best team in basketball. You're expected to win the title. Don't pussyfoot through it. Take it head on.
And I think he set the tone last year from the start, where he, from day one of training camp last year, was emphasizing playing with the right mindset. Just focus on the day by day. Don't look at the expectations. Don't look at what everyone's saying on the outside. Just focus on what you can control. And they did that the entire season. And that's why they didn't let losses spiral. Like, they never really went on long losing streaks. They really were consistently dominant the whole year because they were focused on just winning the day. They're played by that mindset. And that's huge that he was able to get them to buy into that. And I do give him a lot of credit, because today he was talking about, you got to be willing to adapt. Like, just because it worked last year, you can't just expect to run it back and nothing's going to change,
right?
Which, yeah, I give him a lot of credit for.
That's the voice of Justin Turpin, WEEI.com, and the Slam podcast with Megan Ottolini. I saw you guys just recording in there.
You did.
Looking forward to that. When does that come out, by the way?
That'll be out in probably like 30 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, yeah. Oh, like, wow. Just whip
boom,
it.
Boom, boom, boom.
One take. Don't even have to, listen to it again. Just
live
bam,
to
pop
tape.
It right out there. That's how you do a podcast.
Exactly.
I was reading in Shelburne's piece today how it was like, you know, a couple days, 2 weeks after the parade, Brad Stevens was in his office, and it was funny because he was talking, she was writing about how he was very deep into discussions about Derek White and Jason Tatum and their two extensions, which in total were like $440 million. And how there was like, you know, he's talking to the agent, he's talking to the other guy. There was probably like two or three other one of those, you know, Luke Kornet or somebody else who needed to get signed to, and he's there and he's doing all of that, and then all of a sudden Wick calls him and he's like, hey, we got to sell the team. And it got me wondering, how persuasive do you think Brad Stevens was when it came to keeping everything together? Like, do you think there was any pushback from the Grovespecs? Like, Wick called him and was like, hey, Brad, you know, my dad's really not sure about all this. Like, this is a lot of money here. We're going way into the aprons. Like, we're going to have to end up paying basically two separate payrolls here at this point. And Brad Stevens said, you know, what did he say? Like, that's sort of what I wonder, because it seems like he was given the green light to do everything. I wonder how much of it was his idea that he talked Wick into.
I think it is sincere that Wick gave them the green light, because Brad Stevens hasn't changed his stance on this, where he said it earlier in the year right after the draft that it was business as usual, just continue to build the team the best you can. He said it again today, just build the team the best you can. And when you look at it, they had to give out those deals, right? You're not going to not extend Jason Tatum. Of course, if you can get Derek White on the contract you can get him at, you're going to get him.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but they did, and they went. Now they have to sell the team.
Right.
So it's like, you know, right. They did all that, and they were, and they got him. But did they have to re-sign Derek White and Drew Holiday and
maybe that's
Luke Kornet,
just kind of kicking it down the road?
Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard and the whole team. I mean, well, it's a whole team.
Another thing with that is those are tradable contracts.
True.
So if down the road you do have to make moves, and just by the nature of the second apron, that's a real possibility that they are going to have to make some moves eventually. You have tradable pieces, like Derek White's contract is tradable, Sam Hauser's is tradable.
Yeah.
You have all these contracts that you can dump. So I think that also played into it, because, I mean, credit to Brad Stevens and Mike Zarin, because they know what they're doing. And
they definitely know what they're doing. I guess the question is, would you rather Wick and company continue to own the team and run it the way they've been running it, or do you have to re-sign Derek White and everybody? I mean, Tatum and Brown are a given, but you have to re-sign the entire roster and lose Wick and bring in the unknown at ownership. I don't know if that's necessarily a trade.
I would rather have Wick keep running.
I think I would, too,
yeah,
if it meant,
sure,
I had to lose Holiday or Wire, one of those guys. Like, I like the way he runs the team. I know that they've spent a lot here, obviously, but I think that, in general, the grass isn't always greener with,
right,
bigger money, you know? So
but
that could end up being a thing.
That's a decision that's just made overnight.
Right.
Like, that's been made up, and they kind of, this wasn't like, here, we're going to sell the team, let's go out and just burn cash and go wild. Like, it was all planned out. So
mm-hmm.
They have a plan. And one thing about Wick is he sincerely cares about this team. Like, he wants his team to succeed. And that's like kind of the one thing he owes the Celtics before he does go. It's just put him in the right hands to succeed after he leaves, which I think he will. And I think this is something that's just, it's all so calculated. It's not like they're just going out and just spending to spend and just kind of putting this person, whoever's going to buy the team, in the wrong spot. So I give them credit.
Terp, I need the answer to the question we talked about earlier. Biggest question facing the Celtics.
I would say that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, I think people have been talking about it all year. How will they respond to the Olympic snub? I think that's an easy one. It kind of wrote itself, because this team goes as they go. I know there's so many different pieces around this team, but you look at last year, they're the guys that set the temperature for this team. They were the ones that, when they all got that top six together, it was Jason Tatum that called that meeting together and said, we all have to be willing to sacrifice. We all have to be willing to kind of Watch our individual accolades and stats go down a little bit for the betterment of the team. It worked. They won a championship. Now can they do it again? Because clearly winning a championship isn't enough. Jaylen Brown's overlooked for the team, the Olympic team. Jason Tatum doesn't play. So are they willing to continue to defer, continue to grow as playmakers, and not let their individual stats get in the way, kind of continue to do what they did last year and set the tone for the sacrifice and for the team?
Yeah, I went in a different direction, and I said a more simple Jason Tatum's shooting, because I think if Jason Tatum's shooting is an issue, there will be sort of a fracturing of different ramifications. And I don't know if you have any concern about his shooting or not, but I do.
Yeah, and I was actually wrote about this the other day at WEI.com. He finished the postseason 39 of 138, shot on a little over 28%, and was 10 of 38 in the post in the finals against Dallas's worst shooting series. Didn't hit a three in the Olympics. So I worry about his three-point shooting, but that didn't matter last year. I mean, he led the team in points, rebounds, and assists, and they won a championship. So if he can, he can affect the game in other ways. And I think Dallas is a perfect example in the finals where he was using the gravity towards him where he's getting doubled to make the right pass. And maybe it doesn't always show up in the stat sheet, but him doing
did.
The
he averaged about eight assists a game
did,
in the finals.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just but, ask him. If I have to play in other ways, and then he said, you know, I don't have to shoot, and then you're like, you took more shots than anybody.
That's true. He did.
He did,
he take
did
more
do that.
That was one of the weirdest quotes in the history of sports.
Yeah, but he was, I mean, in fairness, he was moving the ball around, too, and did affect the game in other ways. Justin Turpin, thanks so much for jumping in here. Great work, as always. Looking forward to the Slam podcast, which drops a little bit later on today. Thanks so much for jumping in.
Thanks for having me, guys.
See you,
Turpin.